expecting to flip. Kira hit the accelerator, powering them out of a potential crash. But Han could hear the whine of compromised metal. He looked behind them just in time to see the street lamp crash to the ground, showering sparks. The black speeder was still behind them, but it was choosing to remain at a safe distance. Smart.
"I think we almost died back there," Han called out.
"This is harder than it looks," Kira admitted.
Zulu started muttering.
"What was that?" Han asked.
"I'm praying to the Force," Zulu said.
Han didn't know much about religion, but he was pretty sure the Force wasn't something one prayed to. Now was not the time to argue, because they were approaching another turn. He caught a whiff of exhaust, and taillights flashed ahead. Kira had managed to gain on the others.
"This is a much tighter turn," Zulu yelled.
"What?"
Kira yelled back.
"It's a switchback," Han explained. "The turn doubles back on itself, so you'll have to be ready."
"Should I go faster?"
she said.
"No,"
he and Zulu said in unison.
"Are you sure we should turn?"
she said.
"That's the wrong direction for us."
"You're overthinking," Han said. "The race route will get us there. Just trust the road and trust the speeder."
"That makes no sense. Hold on, I'm going to speed up, then swing around the corner, pivot us on the speeder's fulcrum."
"No,"
they both said again.
"Han, help,"
pleaded Zulu. Then to himself,
"Force be with us, force be with us, force be with us."
The air lit up around them, flickering like a nightmare. The black speeder was making its move.
"I can't see,"
Kira cried. Though light blind, Hans thought he could detect a shape ahead and to the left. A regular land speeder. Someone hadn't gotten the message that this road was supposed to remain vacant for the night. It was parked between them and their switchback turn, and Kira was aiming right for it. Zulu swore. Han jumped over the seat into the front.
"Get in the back,"
he ordered, grabbing for the controls.
"I can do it! I've been doing..."
"Now!"
he barked. Clinging for her life to the roll bar, Kira clambered over the seat into the back, while Han slid into the spot she just vacated. He spent a precious moment orienting himself to the controls. Accelerator, right reverse thruster, left reverse thruster, power gauge, and a hover adjustment lever. Oh, right. This abomination had a bounce package. The black speeder pulled up beside them, and the pilot shouted obscenities. Zulu made a rude gesture right back. It sped past, much to Han's relief, and he prepared to take them into the turn. Easy on the accelerator, gentle tap on the left reverse thruster, followed by harder tap right to pivot just so. The regular land speeder came into view. It was way closer than he'd realized.
"Han, look out!"
Kira called. Han punched the hover adjustment lever. A whoosh took his breath away as Han's rear pressed into the seat and their racing speeder jetted upward about 4 meters. It soared over the parked speeder. Han let out a yell of triumph. Then his heart leaped into his throat as they crashed back down. The speeder's belly skimmed the road, leaving a trail of sparks, before the repulsor lift kicked back in and their ride smoothed out. Han steered into the turn with ease. The road became a bridge as they crossed over one of Coronet's many waterways.
"Well, that takes care of the underlighting,"
Zulu yelled over the sounds of engine and wind.
"Pretty sure we left it back at that intersection."
"Think you can catch up to the others," Kira said. "We should at least make it look like we're trying."
They faced another hairpin turn, and Han took it gently. Before them stretched a vast straightway that would take them exactly where they wanted to go. In the distance, the taillights from the other racing speeders glowed like beacons against the night. Han grinned and hit the accelerator. He doubted Rizzo's speeder was up to the task of catching up. The Rodian seemed more interested in useless accoutrements than speed and power. It wasn't a philosophy Han shared. So he was pleasantly surprised to notice the lights ahead getting gradually closer and closer. Maybe the Rodian knew a little something about custom building after all. Water continued to stream from his eyes, and wind plastered his hair back. His damp clothes were icy against his skin, and he could hardly feel his fingers. This far back, away from the pack, they had the empty street all to themselves. He swept side to side, just to get a feel for the controls, and the speeder responded with gratifying agility. It was like skimming air. No, like flying. The roots of Han's teeth began to ache. He realized he hadn't stopped grinning into the cold wind since he'd taken over the pilot's seat. Kira tapped him on the shoulder.
"We're getting close," she said in his ear. "I recognize this part of town."
He gave the accelerator another light boost. Too much fuel would clog the lines, slow them down, and he was delighted when the speeder shot forward. Along the road, steam rose from sewer vents as the night temperature continued to drop. They crossed another bridge, and street lamps cast shards of rusty orange onto the lapping black water. Ahead of them, the other racing speeders banked right. The route would loop around Central Coronet, then back to narrow Sinar Boulevard and the garage.
"Keep going straight," Kira ordered.
They left the boulevard and dipped downward, away from the city lights, into the district known as the Bottoms. Rebolt had once told them that the Bottoms used to be an old swamp, before shipbuilders had drained the land to put up more factories. No sewers led here. The land was too low, the water table too high. After decades of industry, pollution and water seepage had rendered the area all but unusable. It was a land of storage lots and junkyards, and sometimes it was hard to tell the difference between them. Only the poorest and most desperate lived and worked in the Bottoms. Han found it strange that Kira would keep a safe house here. The street narrowed, and Han was forced to slow down. Decay surrounded them. Boxy warehouses with broken windows, ramshackle huts made of scrap metal, and ragged beggars huddling beneath makeshift eaves. The air smelled of wet soot and burned meat. Though it was nighttime, everyone was about their business. Music drifted toward them, coming from the glowing open windows of a cantina. They passed a line of beings waiting at a rickety food stand that advertised eel skewers. Han's stomach growled. As soon as they were settled in Kira's safe house, he'd eat that dog biscuit he'd saved against her advice. Unless it was soaked in sewage from his swim. Well, actually, maybe even then. Kira leaned forward and said, "Turn left at the intersection." It was hardly an intersection, more like the confluence of a few crooked alleys. But he did as directed. "We'll have to hide the speeder," she said. "Any working vehicle in this district gets stripped clean before you can blink."
"Where should we hide it?"
Han asked.
"Just go where I tell you."
She sounded cold and brusque, even more than usual. Maybe she was sore about him taking over the pilot's seat. Kira directed them through the warren of alleys and crooked side streets with confidence. The land sloped lower and lower. The cracked duracrete began to sheen through wetness. Here and there, stubborn weeds grew in clumps, clinging to any patch of soil they could find. In the cracked streets, along the walkways, even on rooftops. The buildings parted, revealing utter darkness. Han adjusted the light setting so he could see his way forward. A vast, swampy field stretched ahead, filled with long, stubborn grass and pollution-stunted trees. Giant, building-sized lumps dotted the field, like massive toads ready to spring. As they approached, the lumps manifested into something more recognizable, and Han gasped. They were starships, hundreds of them, all abandoned hulks, stripped of anything useful, rotting in the swamp.
"The freighter Boneyard," Saulo whispered reverently. "I've heard of it, but I've never been here before."
"Circle around the western edge," Kira said, pointing.
They cruised by a looming shell of metal that in the distant past had housed a high cockpit centered above twin propulsion jets. A clothesline hung between the massive jets, and grimy fabric fluttered in the breeze.
"People live here?" Han breathed.
"People live everywhere," Kira said.
Always, no matter what. They find a way. Is one of these ships your safe house? He asked. Kira said nothing.
We'll have to be careful, Sulo said. This is Silo territory.
Everyone had heard of the Silo, a work camp filled with orphans, run by the nastiest people Corellia had ever seen, where the life expectancy was less than 18 cycles. Word on the street was the Silo made the White Worm Den seem like a palace of luxury and decadence.
There, Kira said. See that big tree? Pull the speeder in behind it.
Trees were uncommon in and around Coronet, so this one was easy to spot, even in the dark. A stunted thing with a huge trunk that grew from the side of a hill, reaching desperately for sunshine it hardly ever found. Behind the tree was a depression of sorts, an indentation in the land that made for a perfect hidden parking spot. Han turned off the speeder and jumped out. His boots made a squelching sound as he landed. They were smack dab in the middle of a bog. Kiro and Saulo landed beside him. Now that the speeder was turned off, they were in almost total darkness. A hint of moonlight diffused through thick clouds, giving both Saulo and Kira a bluish cast to their skin.
So, Han said, looking around at a big black nothing. This is it?
Solemnly, with obvious reluctance, Kira said, Welcome to my home, I guess. She turned, bent toward the steep hill, and yanked at something. An entire layer of sod lifted away, revealing a doorway. Chapter 9 Kira's hands shook as she pulled up the sod that camouflaged the entrance to her safe house. She had spent years fixing this place up. She poured sweat and tears and all the credit she could scavenge into it. And by showing it to Han and Saulo, she was giving it up. Bringing them here was a necessity, she told herself. Now that the Kaldana, the White Worms, the droid Gotra, and maybe even the Empire were all after them, the only safe place was the one no one knew about. But now Han and Saulo knew, and after tonight, things would never be the same. Kira shoved aside the fuselage scrap that served as her doorway and beckoned them into the dark. She felt their presence at her back as she groped along the shelf for the lamp. There. She fumbled for the switch. Light flooded the room, searing her eyes. Han and Saulo stood gaping.
It's a ship, Han said.
Well, we are in the freighter boneyard, she pointed out.
Yeah, but from outside it looked like...
Kira shoved the fuselage scrap back into place, sealing them in against the night. I found this place a while back, she explained. Half buried. There was hardly room to stand up, but the structure seemed sound. She reached up and caressed an arched gray beam. Several of them all in a row gave the room shape, like the metal ribs of a giant beast.
I excavated it and took the dirt outside, covered over the rest. Now only the people who live here in the boneyard know that my hill is actually a ship.
Teams are all
Saulo asked her something, and she looked to Han.
He wants to know if you have power. If not, he says he can rig something for you.
A funny feeling twinged in her chest. It was the feeling she always got when someone wanted to do something nice for her, and she didn't know if there were any strings attached.
Thanks, but no, Kira said. I thought about setting up some solar panels, but they'd just get stolen. I have a few items here that run on fuel, but fuel is really expensive.
Suddenly she saw the place through their eyes. Cold, dark, with only a crooked shelf, a sagging cot, and a rusty table and chairs for furnishings. The ceiling was too low for them to stand up straight, not to mention the constantly seeping floor. She never set her belongings on the ground. They'd be ruined in less than a day. She sighed. The thing she took the most pride in all the galaxy was a rotting garbage heap.
Sorry, she said glumly. I know it's not much, but at least we'll be safe.
It's amazing, Han said. It's perfect. Su'ulo nodded enthusiastically. Kira's face warmed. She wasn't sure why their opinion mattered, but somehow it did.
Well, make yourselves at home. Let's get some sleep. Then we'll make a plan. We should sleep in shifts. The table is durable enough for sleeping, and the cot. One person can keep watch out in the speeder.
Han and Su'ulo exchanged glances. Then they both plopped down into chairs.
Su'ulo leaned his forearms on the table and slumped over, as if relieved to find something sturdy.
So, no sleeping? Kira said.
I feel like I'm going at hyperspeed, Han said. Might be a while before I can fall asleep.
Kira knew exactly what he was talking about. Though her body was exhausted, her mind was too busy for sleep. Su'ulo said something about Rizzo.
He hopes his brother is suffering and scared right now, Han said,
pulling the dog biscuit out of his pocket. It crumbled to pieces in his hand, and he stared down in disgust.
I wouldn't eat that, Kira said, remembering their swim through sewage.
Might not have a choice, Han said.
But he brushed all the pieces onto the table instead of putting them into his mouth.
Su'ulo, Kira said. Why do you hate your brother so much?
Konawa.
The Rodian bleeped in protest.
He doesn't hate him exactly, Han explained. They just don't get along.
After a pause, Han added,
So, are you going to tell us or not?
The line of tiny spines along Su'ulo's scalp fluttered, and his mouth turned down. Then he started talking. With Han's help, Kira gathered the gist of it. Su'ulo and his brother Rizzo were born on Coruscant. They went to school there. Su'ulo loved school so much he took extra classes via the local holonet. He didn't have a knack for languages or literature, like many Rodians who struggled to speak basic. But he was a natural in his engineering courses. He wanted to design hyperdrive someday. Their mother was a sales rep for a small freighter company, and her work often took her off-world. One year, after winning a big sales bonus, she decided to take the whole family with her on one of her business trips. It will be a great education for the boys, she'd said to her husband. So off they went, all four of them, to Corellia, for a sales conference at the famous Buckhell Center. On the second morning of the conference, while Su'ulo and his brother were sleeping in, their parents left for an early breakfast. They were strolling toward a nearby restaurant when a speeder cab swerved off the thoroughfare and missiled into them, killing them instantly, before crashing into Diadem Square. It turned out the speeder cab had been hijacked by an angry factory worker, a young basilisk male who recently had lost his job. He'd been aiming the speeder for the employment office. Su'ulo's parents had just been in the way. Su'ulo paused at this point and blinked a few times.
You don't have to tell us any more if you don't want to, Kira said.
She knew what it was like to have secrets. Giving them to others felt like peeling parts of yourself away, even the seemingly unimportant secrets. Because when you had nothing, your secrets were everything. But maybe a little sympathy was all Su'ulo needed, because he started talking again, even faster than before. Later that day, when Korsak found the boys and told them what had happened to their parents, Rizzo assured them he was old enough to take care of his little brother, that there was no need to send them to an orphanage or a work camp. A few days later, an insurance settlement came through from Coruscant. If Su'ulo and Rizzo were very careful, the money their parents had left them would pay for their educations and get them on their feet. But Rizzo had a better idea. He'd heard about Corellian speeder racing and become obsessed with the idea. Without consulting Su'ulo, he used the insurance settlement to purchase a speeder and enter his first race. He was sure he could double their money with his winnings. He crashed the speeder, leaving them broke. When Su'ulo found out, he was furious. Rizzo seemed to feel awful about it, but no matter how many credits came their way, through begging, through odd jobs, through selling all the clothing and items their parents had brought with them from Coruscant, Rizzo couldn't keep himself from spending it on his new hobby. Finally, 6 months before, Su'ulo had left his brother behind, certain he'd be better off on his own. He left with nothing but the clothes on his back and his data pad. He'd been so relieved to get accepted into the Whiteworm gang, Then he ate at least once per day, a big improvement over being with Rizzo. So no, he didn't hate his brother. His brother was trying, in his own way, to make things right. But Saulo still hoped he was suffering, alone and scared in the engine compartment of Han's speeder. Rizzo had it coming. After Saulo finished telling them, they were silent a long moment. Finally, Kira said, "I'm sorry that happened to you." But she didn't feel all that sorry. At least he'd had parents. His datapad, brought all the way from Coruscant, was by far the most valuable possession of any of the Whiteworms. He'd been given an education, enough to eat during his most formative years. Kira would have cut off a finger for a pass like that. But Saulo took her words at face value.
"Thanks,"
he said. It was one of the few words he could pronounce in Basic. He stood and stretched, bleeping out something. Han said,
"He says he'll take the first watch shift. While he's out there, he'll make good on our word to BJ and strip Rizzo's speeder."
"Come wake one of us up in a few hours," Kira said as Saulo pushed aside the fuselage scrap and stepped into the night. She and Han were alone now.
"I should have let you drive," she said, all in a rush. "I was wrong to insist on doing it myself. I'd read about it and talked about it, and I thought that meant I could do it, but I don't have a feel for it the way you do."
His eyes narrowed, and he studied her for a long moment.
"You're different," he said at last.
The power of anger swelled behind her eyes, and she glared a blaster bolt right back at him.
"Let me guess," she began scathingly. "I'm not like other girls."
She knew a pickup line when she heard it. Somehow she was disappointed to discover that Han was just like all the rest.
"No. I mean, you're not like other people. That's the second time you've admitted you were wrong about something."
She blinked, her anger fleeing as quickly as it came.
"Oh." Then, "Really? That's different?"
He shrugged.
"Most people argue just to argue, but not you. When you're wrong, you just come out and say it."
Kira considered this. It would be deeply impractical to continue on the wrong path just for the sake of argument. His lips turned up into a half smile.
"And you're never impractical."
"I try not to be."
Han rubbed at his eyes. Maybe he was getting tired after all. His ruddy brown hair was curling slightly at the nape now that it was dry, and something mud-like was streaked across his right cheek. She considered whether to draw his attention to it, but decided not to.
"Speaking of practical," he said, and Kira had a funny feeling he was going to ask a question she didn't like. "Why here? All the way across town? This is the worst part of Coronet City, and it's so far away from the Whiteworm Den, I imagine you can't make it out here very often."
She said nothing. He wanted more of her secrets. More of her.
"What I mean is," he continued, "it just doesn't seem practical. How did you find this place anyway? What were you doing way out here in the freighter boneyard?"
Wind whistled through the tree outside. Bilge frogs croaked out that dawn was not too far away. A clanking sound nearly sent Kira out of her chair, but Han said,
"That was Saulo. I bet he just removed the hollow flames attachment."
She settled back, placed her hands on the table. Her short nails were grimed with dirt. Finally, she said,
"I grew up here. In the silo."
Han's eyes flew wide.
"So I knew the territory, knew about the boneyard. Mostly, I think I keep a safe house here because I want to always remember where I came from. I want a reminder every time I'm eating rat sludge for breakfast or pickpocketing an innocent person for Lady Proxima, that things used to be worse. If they can get better once, they can get better again, right?"
Han was studying her closely, almost like he was seeing her for the first time. And she didn't hate it.
"That makes sense," he said carefully. "Is it true what they say about the silo? That it's Corellian hell?"
"It's worse," she said,
and her voice sounded empty and hollow even to her own ears.
How so?
Actually, I'd rather not talk about that.
Suit yourself,
he said, but she could tell he was disappointed. Let's talk about that speeder instead, she said, if only to change the subject. You were awfully familiar with that garage, and you knew just what to say to that droid to convince her to let us go. Hans scratched at the smear on his face, then pulled his fingers away in dismay.
Ugh,
he said.
I hope that's mud.
The droid? Kira prompted.
BJ, Hans said. She's a mechanical repair droid. Someone repurposed her to help build custom speeders. She's quite good, knows a lot. I've learned from her. You know, she has her own speeder, too. B is kind of obsessed with the idea of building the perfect custom speeder. She thinks she's going to win a race herself someday.
And she hates Rize's speeder.
Hates? With the rage of an exploding sun. All those useless attachments. There's nothing more offensive to B than a customization that does not specifically...
Han modulated his voice to sound mechanical and female. Optimize performance and increase efficiency. He grinned.
The speeder she's working on is the ugliest in the garage. But when she's done, it'll have it where it counts.
Kira's brain was finally catching up to the fact that her body was exhausted. She yawned and stretched, saying, So that's where you've been going after shift every night, to work on your own speeder. His face was suddenly stricken. Han was terrible at keeping his feelings hidden.
You won't tell anyone, will you?
Not anyone, Kira said. And she meant it. Unless he betrayed her in some way, or if she really needed the leverage. But probably she wouldn't tell anyone. You pilot the way a fish swims in water, she observed. You're a natural.
I've done a little driving for Proxima, he said. Some getaway stuff, but not much.
You should do more of it. Practice. On the other hand, maybe I should never drive a speeder again.
I'm glad you're bad at driving, he said.
What?
I'm glad there's something in the galaxy you aren't instantly good at. You might be the smartest, most competent person I've ever met.
Kira narrowed her eyes at him. Was he flirting with her? Han could turn an insult into a compliment as smoothly as he took those hairpin turns. No wonder he was a finalist for the head position. Lady Proxima could make use of a slick talker like him. No, he wasn't flirting, she decided. He was acknowledging her worth from a place of genuine respect. Not something she was used to. How did you end up with the White Worms? She asked. Time to put him on the spot for once. Han ran a hand through his must-brown hair.
I was on the street for a long time, running with gangs, doing odd jobs. I was glad when the White Worms took me in.
Parents? She prodded. A secret education like Saulo? He opened his mouth, closed it.
Then, my old man was a lost prince, seventh in line to the throne of Havia Nuket IV. He ran away when his family refused to bless his marriage to a dancing girl.
Kira blinked. Liar. Han just grinned. How old are you? Kira asked. He shrugged.
How should I know? When you're on the streets, the time sort of blends together.
Kira laughed.
What's so funny?
I have no idea how old I am either. 18-ish, maybe? I've stopped growing, is all I can say.
That's my best guess, too, he said. 18-ish.
So, back to your father. I take it you didn't get along. He shrugged.
Sometimes. I remember one night after he'd been drinking, he took me back to the freighter factory where he worked. We just sat on the fence, staring at the shipyard full of fancy new ships. He sipped his bottle of ale and kicked at the fence, and I remember it was getting really cold. So I asked him why he dragged me all the way out there, and he said, I wanted you to see this. These ships. This is what I build. What I give to the galaxy. But no matter how many hours I put in, I'm nothing. A nobody.
Han paused in the telling and looked her straight in the eye.
Then he said, "Han, my boy, when you grow up, don't build ships like me. You're meant for better. You're meant to fly them."
Kira didn't know what to say. That's really... Wait, are you lying again?
I guess you'll never know.
At her frown, he added hastily,
"I'll tell you one true thing, Kira. Something I haven't told anyone, just because you told me about the silo."
"I'm listening."
"The reason I want my own speeder, the reason I worked so hard on it, risked so much for it..."
He took a deep breath.
"It's the closest I'll ever get to flying a starship."
At last, something rang true. "I guess I can understand that. But did you or did you not run away from your parents?" she pressed. Han avoided looking at her.
"Actually, I'd rather not talk about that."
She waited the space of 3 heartbeats. "Han," she said softly, and his gaze snapped to hers. "It's okay to have things you never want to talk about, like I do." Some kind of understanding passed between them. It wasn't a practical feeling, but she felt it the same way she would feel a fist in the gut, or maybe a whispered breath on her ear.
"Yeah,"
he said, nodding slowly.
"It's okay."
After another moment of comfortable silence, he added,
"You know, I think I'll be able to sleep now."
"Me too," she said. She had 2 tattered, stained blankets on the shelf. She gave one to Han, who stretched out on the table and pillowed his head on his bent arm. Within moments, his chest fell and rose with the deep, even breathing of sleep. Kira laid down on her cot and pulled the other blanket up to her chin. Her last thought was that a boy she hardly knew had come into this place she never shared with anyone, was, in fact, sleeping beside her. And she was glad he was here. Chapter 10. It felt like only moments had passed when Su'ulo woke Han to take a watch shift. And a few hours after that, when the sun was rising in an uncharacteristically clear sky, Han finally woke Kira.
"Already?"
she said, yawning and stretching.
"It's daytime out there,"
he whispered, so as not to wake Su'ulo, who was curled up on the table, the blanket kicked down to his feet.
"Maybe we should get going."
"No, get some sleep," Kira said, rising. "We're safe here for a while. Rest while you can. I'll keep watch and come up with a plan."
So that's what they did. Han was asleep again as soon as his head hit the cot, and he didn't stir until someone shook him awake.
"Han, get up, you lazy gwerp," Su'ulo said in Hatties. "Kira needs our help."
Through sheer force of will, Han got to his feet. His muscles were stiff and sore, and his very bones ached. No surprise, since they'd been running all day and night with very little sleep or food. Speaking of food, something smelled delicious. Kira was at the table, and as he sat beside her, she handed him an eel skewer dripping with sauce.
"I picked up some food for us this afternoon."
"It's afternoon?"
he said. He grabbed his skewer and bit down. Sauce dripped down his chin, and he caught it with a finger, not wanting to waste a single drop. It didn't taste particularly good, but it was better than the white worm breakfast sludge, and he needed the energy it would provide.
"With what money?"
he asked with his mouth full. "I always keep a few credits hidden here," she said. "When I can." Light trickled into the space around the sorry excuse for a door, and through an air vent above their heads. A few things about Kira's safe house had escaped his notice in the dark, like the dried flowers sticking out of an old soup can on the shelf, the ratty cargo blanket that someone had embroidered with swirls of blue thread, and hanging above the head of the cot, a chandelier of sorts, made of old wire and bits of colored glass. Kira loved this place, and she loved beautiful things.
Gruffly, he said, "Su'ulo said you needed our help."
"I've figured out how we can get back into town," she said.
but I'm not sure where to go next or what we should do. I need your help deciding our next move.
I know what we should do, Han said. Run away to Corvella. We could get lost in that city easy. No one there knows us.
Is running away your answer to everything? Kira said. Han frowned.
I never run away from a fight. Well, he amended, unless I'm pretty sure I'm going to die.
Anyway, I've no doubt our descriptions are all over Corvella too, she said. They might not know about Saulo yet. She indicated the Rhodian with a lift of her chin. He sat at the other end of the table, fiddling with something he'd yanked off the speeder. But you and I are made the moment we're out in the open.
So what do you suggest? Han asked.
We need more information before we can decide anything. About that data cube. About why everyone wants it so badly. Your friend Tool tossed it to you. Said to run for your life. That means he trusts you.
He might not be functional anymore, Han pointed out.
He didn't like the way saying that made him feel.
Last I saw him, he was getting blasted.
What about the people he worked for? I think if we contacted them, let them know that Tool entrusted the data cube to you for a reason, they'd be forced to listen to us. They might extend some trust to us, too.
The same wind that had blown the clouds from the Corellian skies rattled the fuselage scrap that covered their doorway. Icy air gusted against Han's cheeks.
Saulo looked up from his project and said,
Finding the droid Gotcha is a better idea than tangling with a smuggling syndicate or the Empire. And even though none of them are looking for me, Lady Proxima has figured out by now that I'm helping you. So my vote is to contact Tool or his employer.
What did he say? Asked Kira.
He votes we contact the droid Gator.
Fine. How?
Han rubbed at his chin.
Tool might still be alive.
Even if he's not, Saulo said. I might be able to pull something from his memory banks, or salvage his comm, find out who he communicated with last.
The thought of sifting through the dead metal shell that used to be his friend made the eel skewer sit poorly in Han's belly.
I guess, he said,
and relayed Saulo's words to Kira.
It would be a huge risk, going back to the foundry, she said.
Han shrugged.
Maybe we'll get lucky.
I'll ask the Force for its blessing, Saulo said.
Han took the last bite of skewer, wiped his mouth with his sleeve, and said,
You sure that's how the Force works?
Saulo slumped in his chair.
No.
Then why?
The spines on his head fluttered.
I don't know anything, okay? No one will tell me anything about it. No one knows...
He swallowed hard, as if collecting himself.
I read every page that was on display loitered at a street corner near where I lived.
Made sense.
Wore dirty robes.
It was like my eyes were open, and I knew the Force was real.
One day, I finally took one. It led me to an underground museum in Coruscant. Everything there was illegal, and I shouldn't have gone, but I was just a kid, barely 12 years old. I looked around. They had this book, well, an ancient manuscript, called The Annals of Light and Being. I read every page that was on display, and it just made sense. It was like my eyes were opened, and I knew the Force was real.
What's he talking about, Han? Kira asked.
Converting to some religion.
Then, a couple years later, Imperials found out about the museum. They raided the place. The owner disappeared. The street preacher disappeared. The annals disappeared. No one would tell me what happened to them, and no one could answer my questions about the Force. But I know it's real. I don't know how it works, but it helps me. Every day, I can feel it.
What's he saying?
He's talking about his feelings.
Ew, she said.
Listen, pal, I don't care if you pray to a Force or a god or whatever. Can't hurt, right?
Han expected a look of gratitude or something for his being so gracious. Instead, Saulo's one good antenna drooped with disappointment.
Sure,
he said.
Can't hurt.
So what about the foundry? Kira said. It's a risk, but not so risky as continuing to fly blind. I say we go for it. See if we can find Tool. Make contact with the droid Gotra. There were so many reasons not to do it. The Kaldana thugs could be waiting for him. He could be faced with Tool's non-functioning carcass. It was too near Whiteworm territory. But Kira was right. They were flying blind, and that was going to get them killed faster than anything. I agree. Saulo?
I agree.
Han looked to Kira.
You have a plan for getting us there?
I do. I thought about it all night.
This ought to be good. So let's hear it.
Kira smiled, that enormous smile that was like the sun bursting through Corellian clouds. We take the speeder. Han and Saulo gaped at her.
That's it? All night and that's what you came up with?
Hey, a big part of figuring out the perfect plan is eliminating all the bad plans, she said. And I can assure you, I thoroughly examined and discarded at least 10 alternate possibilities.
But that speeder is bright green, he protested. With Rodian antennae. Not exactly the best way to lay low. Everyone who sees that thing is going to remember it.
Yeah, we'll have to take off the antennae. For now, she added hastily when Saulo started to rise from the table. We can reattach them later. You can do that, right? Saulo mumbled that he could.
Rizzo is probably looking everywhere for his speeder, Han said. V has freed him from the engine compartment by now, and it's a good bet he'll be mad as hell, and out for revenge.
She shrugged. It's not like he'll go to Corsac for help locating an illegal vehicle, right? And he's looking for his Rodian speeder, driven by his Rodian brother. Now that most of the customizations have been stripped, we'll be in a normal speeder, driven by you. Well, almost normal. It will still be bright green. But this is Corellia. Everyone customizes their speeder a little. We'll blend right in. Han considered this and found a flaw in her reasoning.
You said descriptions of us are planet-wide now, even as far as Corvella. We're sure to be recognized.
We'll have to wear hoods, she conceded. I was going to send Saulo into the Bottom's Market to pick up a few cloaks. We'll wear driving goggles, too.
How will we pay for the cloaks and goggles?
Saulo held up the project he was working on.
Bounce package, the Rodian said. I've modified it to work on droids and personal lifts, as well as speeders. I'll sell it in the market and buy some cloaks.
Han was a little sorry to see the bounce package go. It had really saved their necks the night before. Not to mention made him feel, if only for a moment, like he was flying.
You've thought this through, he said.
I have. They could keep running, but everything would eventually catch up to them. They needed to fix this, and in order to do that, they had to know more.
All right, fine, he said. We'll just drive right up to the foundry like we belong there. When in doubt, brazen it out, right?
A few hours later, they were cloaked and goggled and speeding toward the foundry. The sun was already low in the sky. They'd let Han sleep a bit, and gathering their new clothes had taken some time. It would have been nice if they could have afforded some fresh water for bathing, too. But you couldn't have everything.
We'll get there right on time for shift change, Kira explained.
We don't have employee identities,
Saulo pointed out.
We can't just walk right in.
Sure we can,
Han said, steering into a busy thoroughfare. No one gave them a second glance.
So far, so good. I've walked into the foundry plenty of times. You just stand in the employment line. Each day they pick a bunch of people to do some work under the table. Mostly cleanup, sometimes testing. The pay is terrible. And if you're injured or killed, too bad for you. But it's a way in.
How do we make sure we get picked? Kira asked. Han smiled at her.
Trust me.
Something's wrong, Saulo said.
What do you mean?
Han asked. Saulo pointed to a group of stormtroopers marching through a fish market.
And there.
He pointed to a droid walking into an apartment building.
That's a maintenance droid, and it's carrying a gun.
Kira smacked Zulo's hand down. Don't point, she said. It will draw attention.
But do you see?
He persisted.
There are more beings packing firepower today than I've ever seen since my family arrived on this awful planet.
I see it, Kira said. I've been noticing it too.
Han couldn't tell if she actually understood Su'ulo, or if she put it together on a hunch.
We need to watch each other's backs going into the foundry. It took them less than an hour to get past Old Town and into the manufacturing district. The foundry was a huge complex of buildings. Smokestacks that stretched as high as skyscrapers belched dirty smoke. Freighters took off and landed in the distance, hauling recently manufactured components through the foundry's small, dedicated spaceport. Other components were hauled out on freight speeders. A line of them headed toward the outskirts of the city, to the shipyards, where component parts would be assembled into all sorts of starships, but mostly light freighters. Han parked their speeder in the designated area. Su'ulo pulled out his data pad and encrypted the console controls. A good encryption wasn't a guarantee against theft, but it would make amateurs and street thieves think twice. The three of them kept their hoods up and their goggles on as they strode toward the massive metal gate and the line of ragged hopefuls waiting outside. There were hundreds of them, waiting to see if they'd get picked for work.
You sure you can get us in? Kira asked.
There are a lot more people than I expected, he admitted.
Han!
Hey, we might get lucky, he said with a shrug.
Su'ulo began praying to the Force. The sun was setting beyond the spaceport, taking the day's little warmth with it. Hopeful workers huddled close, hands stuffed in sleeves and pockets, hoods up, threadbare jackets clipped tight. Everyone was weathered and wrinkled, hungry and cold.
See? We've had some luck already, Han whispered as they got in line. This cold snap gives us a good reason to keep these cloaks on, and our driving goggles look like safety eyewear.
Kira gave him a look that could curdle milk. A klaxon sounded, signaling end of shift. A moment later, the gate slid open, and exhausted workers poured out, anxious to get home for the night. After the flood of beings became a mere trickle, it was followed by a group of humans in stiff blue uniforms. One woman held a data pad. A man carried a portable loudhailer. The fellow with the loudhailer held it up and shouted,
We're looking for some duff rats tonight. Volunteers, please step forward.
A murmur rose from the crowd, and everyone shifted in place. Fully a third of the supplicants turned and left. I take it no one wants to be a ducked rat? Kira whispered to Han.
It's the worst job in the foundry, he whispered back.
Then he stepped forward, and Kira and Su'ulo followed. Over 100 volunteers remained. The woman with the data pad pointed at a few and told them to go home.
Too big, she said. We need small bodies for small spaces.
Han pushed his friends forward.
I've got some small bodies right here, he called out.
Then he bent his knees and hunched a little, trying to look slighter.
We're experienced crawlers. We'll get those ducts clean for you.
The man with the loudhailer waved them through. They hurried toward the entrance before anyone could change their minds or get a better look at them.
We did it, Kira said.
I told you we'd get lucky, Han said.
The Force heard my prayers, Su'ulo said.
Han rolled his eyes.
So what are duct rats anyway? Kira asked.
Beings who crawl around the air vents and machinery intakes, cleaning them of ash and soot, chemical residue, the occasional life form.
And it's dangerous? She asked.
Yeah, it's really easy to take a wrong turn and find yourself in the intake of a live machine. And sometimes people get a bad cough, the killing kind.
Why don't they use droids?
The particulates tend to gum up their joints, among other things. Besides, good droids are expensive. It's easier and cheaper to just use desperate people.
They reached the entrance, where a Keldor stood sentry, his breather mask wheezing with age and grime.
We're here for duct cleaning duty, Han said. Which way?
The Keldor opened the door for them, revealing a massive, bustling assembly floor. But he pointed right toward a branching hallway. The three of them strode into the factory.
I can't believe that worked, Kira said.
Me neither, Han muttered.
What?
I said I told you it would.
Kira lowered her voice.
Now we need a distraction, so we can slip away to the basement.
The air was hot and dry, a welcome change from outside at first. But within moments, Han felt sweat breaking out on his neck. Everything smelled of smoke and overheated lubricant, all tinged with a sharp, metallic bite. Parts clanked and conveyor belts groaned. Stamping presses crashed down on metal sheets, and drill bits screamed holes into stubborn joists. Mechanical arms set in ceiling mounts moved blindingly fast, sorting and tagging, dropping adhesive here, trimming away excess there. Through it all, a flock of droids and organics checked equipment, supervised conveyors, cleaned metal shavings and black oil from the floor. Everyone was haggard and dazed, going through the motions on autopilot. Han didn't see a single smile or hear a word of conversation. Many were missing fingers or limbs. One Besalisk fellow had a constellation of burn scars across his cheek. He'd obviously gotten a face full of hot metal shavings. The foundry was a joyless, luckless place, and for the thousandth time, Han was glad he'd joined the White Worms instead of embracing the factory life.
Han, any idea for a distraction? Kira prompted. We could accidentally crash one of these conveyors. See that guy pushing the janitor cart?
She was pointing to a human male, no older than they were, pushing a large cart full of scrap. He paused occasionally to sweep something up. When his cart was full, he'd take it to the smelter.
She said, we could spill the scrap onto the belt where they're making those thingies.
Alluvial dampers.
Whatever. All those shavings and scrap bits would stop the conveyor in its tracks, right?
Right, Su'lo said. But then we'd...
A scream erupted, overpowering the noise of the factory. Then came a heart-rending keen that made the hair on the back of Han's neck stand up straight. Everyone on the assembly floor left their posts to congregate around something. A red light came on, pulsing from the ceiling high above, and an emergency siren flooded their ears.
What was that? Kira mouthed.
But Han couldn't hear her over the sound of the siren.
Han smelled blood.
A moment later, bodies parted, and Han glimpsed a man lying on the floor in a pool of crimson, clutching at his empty elbow socket. His severed forearm lay stiff beside him.
That's our distraction, Han said in her ear. Let's go. The basement is this way.
Han hastened them down the side of the building toward the back, where an access corridor would lead them to a freight lift.
I guess we got lucky again, he said.
Our luck was that man's loss.
Su'lo pointed out.
The great philosopher Flacial Krina speculates that luck is a finite thing to be doled out in increments. Maybe the galaxy's luck will run out someday.
Su'lo, remind me to never get an education, Han said.
Better him than us, Kira said.
And even though Han agreed with her, it didn't quite sit right. They reached the corridor, turned right, and came to a turbo lift. Han was about to activate the console when the door slid open, and a tall, white-haired man wearing a management uniform strode out.
Blast, Kira whispered.
What are you doing here?
He demanded. Then his head cocked as he recognized the siren wailing in the next building.
Some guy lost an arm back there, Han said. Blood went everywhere. Conveyor belt got gummed up. Threw alluvial damper parts all over the floor. Knocked a few people in the head. The shift supervisor sent us to grab all the cleaning and medical supplies we can carry.
Kira added, he said there's a supply closet this way? Han resisted the urge to kick her. When lying, it was always best to keep your embellishments to a minimum. But the white-haired man thumbed toward the lift.
Down two levels, out the door and to your right. Hells, really? The alluvial damper line. We haven't had a dismemberment on that line for almost 2 years.
And with that, he strode away without giving them a second glance.
That could have gone very badly, Kira said, staring after him.
But it didn't.
She narrowed her eyes at Han.
You're very good at talking your way out of things.
It didn't sound like a compliment. And that rankled, because maybe he wanted it to be. A little respect from her shouldn't be so hard. Not that her opinion mattered. It wasn't like she was his friend or anything.
Su'ulo directed the lift to the basement level, which turned out to be a damp, cluttered storage space for old assembly works. It reminded Han a little of the Whiteworm Lair, with its defunct machines and rusty pipes, and everywhere the slick sheen of seeping water.
This way,
Han said, and he took them to the door that he knew led into the underground bunker, the one where Tool had been shot while throwing the data cube to him.
Be ready for anything, he said,
and he keyed the door open. The sick, sweet scent of carrion nearly overpowered them.
What in holy moons is that?
Su'ulo said, waving a hand in front of his face.
Dead body, Han said. So watch your step.
The room was pitch black. All that blaster fire must have destroyed the lighting.
We have to close the door behind us, Kira whispered.
She was right on his heels.
We have to.
I'll fire up my data pad, Su'ulo offered.
And sure enough, within moments, their way was lit by a soft blue glow. Kira closed the door while Han took stock. The floor was sticky with blood. Blaster marks scorched the walls. There was only one dead body. Han would never have recognized him, except for the ridiculous mustache that still drifted down his face, even in death. Mustache Guy was definitely the source of that awful smell. It had only been a little over a day, but he was in a ripe state of decomposition, thanks to the Foundry's hot atmosphere, and the fact that blaster fire had ripped open his belly, spilling his guts on the floor. Tiny rodent paw prints smattered the floor around him.
Poor fellow, came Kira's voice.
Han had seen worse. Still, he had to look away. No sign of the Kaldana woman. She must have been one of the people who'd chased him into the sewer.
Tool,
he whispered. Su'ulo's data pad only lit the space around him, leaving the edges of the room in darkness. Han heard, or maybe only thought he heard, a slight mechanical whirring.
Tool,
he said again. The sound came again, stretched out and slippery, as if coming from a dying power source.
Han.
Tool! Su'ulo, over here! Can you light this corner for me? I think he... Oh, hell.
Tool was crumpled on the floor, legs splayed, his back against the wall. His head drooped down to his chest, and his welder had broken off. It lay dismembered on the ground beside him. He was badly dented and covered in scorch marks, and the light indicator for his power core was dim, blinking out at irregular intervals.
Han,
Tool said, his voice garbled and scratched.
Need repair.
Help me turn him over, Han ordered. I need to open his access compartment.
Kira and Su'ulo bent to help. They grunted and heaved, but Tool hardly budged.
This is the oldest droid I've ever seen,
Su'ulo said, catching his breath.
He has a fusion power core. That's ancient. I bet a collector would pay top credits for...
Less talking, more lifting, Han said as they tried again.
This time they managed to get him onto his shoulder. Han ripped open the access compartment in his back and rerouted all the power from his legs and attachments to his receptors and memory banks.
That's exactly how I would have done it,
Su'ulo said.
Sorry, pal, Han said to Tool. This will leave you paralyzed for now, but at least you'll be able to talk to us.
Could not move anyway,
Tool said, and Han was relieved to hear the clarity in his voice.
A blaster severed the central servo motor cable in my back. I was helpless even to reroute power. I'm very glad you came when you did.
We can fix you up, Han assured him.
His fusion core shut down due to overheating,
Su'ulo said, peering into the compartment.
He's been on auxiliary power all day. Once the core cools off, I can get it humming again. Tool, is it all right with you if my datapad talks to your internal processor? It's the fastest way for me to run a diagnostic.
Please do, Tool said. But I will thank you to stay out of my memory banks. I assume you came